Stephen was kind enough to give me an outline of that speech, and so I'm going to go straight down through his outline. The first section of the outline is where he's trying to prove that all have sinned. Well, we agree with that. That's not at dispute tonight. It's where did they get their sin? Is it their own sin, or did they inherit sin? We all have sinned. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23. You can't put it better, any better than that. But the question is it because they inherited sin, or is it because they do sin? Well, notice what Romans 3 says, and that's in the context where it says, for all have sinned. They are all gone out of the way. Not born that way. Remember I said you can't go somewhere, you can't go to town if you're already in town? They are together become. Not born that way, they became that way, unprofitable. There is none that doeth good. We're talking about something that people do, not what they inherited. No, not one. With their tongues they have used deceit. That's something they do. They're telling lies. That's not the sin, the original sin of Adam. The poison of asp is under the lips, whose mouth is full of cursing. That's not the original sin. That's something these people did. And bitterness. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Now that's something Cain did, but not Adam. Destruction and misery are in their ways, not Adam's ways. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of the God. So the Bible tells us about all sinning, and it makes it clear it's that they sinned. It's not because they inherited any sin. But Stephen made the point, you can put it number 14, Stephen made the point, well, since the Bible says all men have sinned, that would include children too. Well, Stephen, the debate tonight is not how early children start to sin. Whether it's 12 years old, or 8 years old, or 6 years old, or 4 years old, whatever it is, the question is at the moment they're born, do they inherit the sin of Adam? So even if children were included when it says all men have sinned, that would just get us into an argument about the age of accountability, not if they're born guilty of sin. Now, the truth of the matter is, that's not the one I want. I want the one on the innocence. In Jeremiah number 41, I told you 14, but I must be dyslexic. It's dyslexic. Jeremiah 19 verse 4, because they have forsaken me and have estranged this place and have burned incense in it unto other gods and have filled this place with the blood of innocents. That's talking about children, probably young children. They were sacrificing them to their gods. They were called innocent. So I don't believe a one-year-old has committed sin. I don't believe that's what it means when it says all men have sinned. They're called innocents. Now, Stephen replied to this point last night by saying, well, this doesn't mean they were innocent completely, but only had not done anything that would make them worthy of this death. You know, in the Old Testament, Stephen, I'm going to give you an illustration. Suppose, you know, when they were to bring a sacrifice, it was supposed to be without blemish. Am I remembering that right? Suppose that this animal, this calf, was born with only 3 legs. And you brought up that to sacrifice that. Do you think God would accept that as being a sacrifice with no blemish? Well, according to you, it would, because, well, he was born that way, therefore it's still without any blemish. You see? But God wouldn't accept that. Come up and give just something that's not even worth anything to you, because the cow wouldn't do you any good anyway. And you say, well, this just means they really weren't innocent. They were just innocent of any deed that would cause them to be worthy of this death. No, it says they were innocent. A calf without blemish means that nobody shot them in the leg after they were born, and they weren't born with 3 legs. This is a child that's innocent. That means he's completely innocent. He wasn't born with sin, and he hasn't committed any sin. And so, all men in Romans 3:23 and the like passages, all men, that doesn't include Jesus, does it, Stephen? Even though he was a man. All men is not meant to be universal in the sense of every man, absolutely. Jesus is an exception to that. He's not talking about children there, because he goes on at the end of the chapter and in Romans 6 to talk about how they could be saved. He's talking about men who need salvation. And his point is that all men need salvation. They sin and therefore they need salvation. A baby doesn't need salvation. Doesn't need the forgiveness of Christ. He doesn't have any sin. Therefore, he's not talking about them. And then Stephen brought up Genesis 8:21. I don't have a chart on that one, Terry. Genesis 8:21, the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Now, Stephen took that to mean youth as in 1-year-old, 3-year-old, 5-year-old. Note how youth is used in the Old Testament. Goliath, 1 Samuel 17, verse 33, a man of war from his youth. 2 years old, Goliath was running around. He probably was about 6 feet tall by then, but I don't think he was going at war when he was 2 years old, but it said he was a man of war from his youth. Now, my nephew here, Jonathan, is about 20, something like that. He's in his youth, okay? He's old enough to go to war, and he's old enough to sin. But a 2-year-old is not old enough to sin. He's not old enough to go to war. Proverbs 5:18, rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Is that talking about a 2-year-old child? The wife of thy youth? Ecclesiastes 12:1, remember thy Creator in the days of thy youth. My son turning 3, tomorrow he can't remember the Creator. He doesn't understand what the Creator is. He's not old enough. This is talking about youth, as in my nephew, Jonathan. Imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. We're not talking about 2 years old. We may be talking about 8 years old, I'm not sure. We're probably talking about teenagers here. That's what youth is. Now, he brought up Job 14, verses 1 and 4. And I want you to put up number 17, Terry. I think you probably already have it up there. Job 14, verse 4 says, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean one? Not one. And verse 1, I should turn there. Verse 1 points out that the unclean thing he's talking about is a woman. Man that is born of a woman is a few days and full of trouble. And there's 2 or 3 other passages in Job that say, how can man be clean that is born of woman? It's parallel to this. This verse 4, is when it says, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean, is talking about how can a clean thing come out of an unclean thing, a woman. First of all, Stephen, we have to be careful anytime we're quoting Job, because some of the things that Job and his friends said were not true. They weren't inspired necessarily. Now, the Bible is inspired, and so we know for a fact they said those things. But it doesn't mean what they said is true. They could have told a lie, and then the Bible reliably told us the lie they told. The Lord answered Job and said, who is this that darkeneth counsel by words without knowledge? So not everything he said was true. But I want you to notice, if this means, I don't think this is talking about sin here. This is not talking about sin. If you look at verse 1 and verses 2 and verse 5, when it talks about unclean here, it's talking about a troubled life and mortality, not clean in the sense of moral uncleanness. But if this were talking about sin, I'll ask you, Stephen, how can a clean thing come from who is born of woman? How could Jesus be born clean since he was born of a woman, unclean? How could he do that, Stephen? Now you answer that question and you'll have the answer to your argument, won't you? How could Jesus, who is clean, be born of a woman who is unclean? According to your application of this verse that is talking about sin, it would be impossible. But we know Jesus was clean. We know Jesus was clean. Now, it's interesting, last night, I brought up the chart about how that Jesus was without sin and we're just like him that I did in my previous speech. And I said, if we're just like him and he's without sin, then that means we're without sin. And he said, no, Jesus didn't inherit sin because evidently sin is inherited through the Father and Jesus didn't have an earthly father. Now, I would like to know how you could possibly reconcile what you said last night with tonight. Last night you said Jesus didn't inherit sin because he did not have an earthly father. And I agree, he didn't have an earthly father. And so you said evidently the sin from Adam comes down through the father. Tonight you're using Job 14 verse 4 to prove that the sin comes down through the mother. That how could a clean thing come from an unclean mother? So if the mother is in sin, then the baby would have to be in sin. That contradicts what you said last night. Now the Catholics have a great way to get around this. The Immaculate Conception. But they wouldn't use this verse, I don't think, to prove their position. They'd be in big trouble. Stephen, when you get up here, we need to know how you can reconcile that. Last night you said it came through the Father, yet you're using this verse to prove the transfer of sin, and it's talking about the mother. And then he brought up Job 15, verse 4, which is basically the same thing. 15:14, excuse me. What is man that he should be clean? And he that is born of a woman, there you have it, talking about a woman, that he should be righteous. I want to know, Stephen, how could Jesus do that? How could Jesus do that if that's what that's talking about, sin? He was born of a woman. Is that Galatians 4:4, Rick, where it says Jesus was born of a woman? Again, I want you to notice from a passage like, I believe this is Eliphaz talking. Didn't you tell me that last night, Papa, in that place in Job 15? In Job chapter 42, verse 7. Everybody notice this verse. And it was so that after the Lord had spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, My wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends, for ye have not spoken of me the thing that is right as my servant Job hath. You can't necessarily trust what Eliphaz said. Now maybe some of the things he said was true, but not necessarily all of them. And then, Terry, put up number 21. Stephen brought up Psalm 51, verse 5. Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. Now, this is talking about the transfer of the guilt of sin through the mother, Stephen. How can you reconcile that with what you said last night, that Jesus could be born innocent of sin because he didn't have an earthly father? That sin is transferred through the father, and since Jesus didn't have an earthly father, he could be born innocent of sin. Now you're trying to bring up a verse that again talks about what you think is the transfer of sin through the mother. This verse is not talking about the transfer of sin from any person to any person. First of all, the verse says that David was shapen in iniquity, if he's the writer of this psalm, and he probably is. Let me ask you, Stephen, does born in a tongue, Acts 2 verse 8, mean that the audience was born speaking in Acts 2, or that they were born into an environment that taught them that tongue? I was born into the tongue of English. That didn't mean that the moment I was born I was speaking English. That means that I was born into a society that taught me English. And so David was shaped in iniquity. He was born in iniquity. Doesn't mean he was born committing iniquity. It means he was born into a society that committed iniquity. Another example. John was born in a potato patch. According to your reasoning on this verse, Stephen, that would mean John is a potato. And then the last part, in sin did my mother conceive me. Look at this sentence, Stephen, as an example. Does in anger did my brother hit me indicate that I was angry or that my brother was angry? This says, in sin did my mother conceive me. In anger did my brother hit me. Who was angry, my brother or me? So according to your reasoning on this, in sin did my mother conceive me, that would mean the mother was in sin. I don't really think that's what it's saying. But that would be according to your position. I personally think David is using a hyperbole here, an obvious and intentional exaggeration. In discussing the magnitude of his own sinful state, most likely the sin with Bathsheba and the killing of her husband, he exaggerates that point by saying even the mother was in sin when he was conceived. Not that she really was. It's an exaggeration. Like in Job 31 verse 18, which you agreed last night was a hyperbole, an exaggeration to make a point, to emphasize a point. Job said, I have guided her, talking about the widow from my mother's womb. And you agreed that didn't mean that he started guiding a widow right when he came out of the womb. But you said, you agreed with me. It was trying to emphasize how early in his life he was guiding a widow. It's a hyperbole. This kind of expression is a figure of speech is used many times in the Bible. And Stephen last night agreed this was a hyperbole. That's all that Psalm 51 verse 5 is. It's saying that in sin, I am so bad that my mother was in sin when I was conceived. But not really saying she was, but it's a hyperbole to emphasize how bad his sin was. And then Psalm 58 verse 3, Terry, number 22, is a similar passage. The wicked are estranged from the womb. They go astray as soon as they be born, speaking lies. Again, David is using a hyperbole here, an obvious and intentional exaggeration, to emphasize how quickly men depart from sin. Again, the two examples of hyperboles in close proximity, thou didst make me hope when I was upon my mother's breast. He's not that he was hoping while he was still nursing, but he's just saying early in life, I guided the widow from my mother's womb. Not that he did it right then exactly, but that he did it early in life. It's a hyperbole. That's all this is saying. Babies don't speak. They don't speak lies. But he's just saying, I told lies, or the wicked tell lies early in life. Now notice, this doesn't say that infants are born astray. That it says they go astray. They go astray. That proves that they weren't astray when they started. This is talking about when they're old enough to speak lies. And let's move on. We're running out of time. In Proverbs 20, verse 11, Stephen quoted, even a child is known by his deeds, whether what he does is pure and right. Everybody turn to Isaiah. Chapter 7, verse 16. Talking about Jesus, it says, but before the child shall know to refuse the evil and choose the good, the land that thou abhorrest shall be forsaken of both her kings. So there's a time, we call it the age of accountability. The Bible teaches it. It doesn't matter what you call it. But the Bible teaches that there's a time before the child shall know to choose the good and refuse the evil. According to Stephen's position last night, he would never be able to choose the good because he's incapable of that. And then he brought up Proverbs 22, verse 15. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him. I don't think this is talking about sin when it says foolishness. We got a lot of foolishness going on with our kid, your grandkids at the house. It's not sin. Foolish, according to the Random House Dictionary, means lacking forethought or caution, trifling, paltry, or silly. How much time do I have left? Thank you very much.